I'm Tracy Sable tonight on EWTN News Nightly. Taking a toll, fallout after President Trump's announcement of tariffs on several countries. We discuss what it could mean for your wallet. Making cuts. USAID staffers are told to stay out of the Washington, D.C. headquarters as reports suggest the agency has been shuttered. 2 years later, Vice President J.D. Vance visits East Palestine, Ohio, on the anniversary of the catastrophic train derailment. And the light of the Lord, Pope Francis offers a reflection on the feast of the presentation of Jesus. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the Feast of St. Blaise. Our top story tonight, President Donald Trump's threat to impose new tariffs on Canada, Mexico, and China suddenly has some world leaders negotiating and others criticizing. The tariffs were supposed to kick in tomorrow, but deals are already being made, for starters, with Mexico. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen?
Tracy, today, President Trump spoke with Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, as well as Mexico's president. And President Trump confirmed that tariffs on goods from Mexico have been paused for a month for negotiations.
With a threat of new tariffs, President Donald Trump and Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum strike a deal. Trump tells reporters in the Oval Office.
And they've agreed to put in 10,000 soldiers permanently, like forever, 10,000 soldiers at their side of the border and stop fentanyl and illegal aliens from coming into our country. They have a big incentive to do.
Trump's tariffs against Canada and China were still slated to go into effect Tuesday. President Trump says the U.S. has not been treated well by Canada and that Canada is tough to do business with.
And we can't let them take advantage of the U.S. They don't take our agricultural product for the most part. They don't take our cars. They make cars, but they basically don't take our cars.
President Trump also zeroed in on the EU.
Well, we have massive deficits with the European Union, massive, like $350 billion, if you can believe it. They don't take our farm product. They don't take our cars. They don't take almost anything, but we take their cars. We have millions of cars coming in.
In Belgium, Poland's prime minister unleashed this harsh tariff criticism.
I think that we have to do everything to avoid this totally unnecessary and stupid tariff wars or trade wars.
And the EU High Representative for Foreign Affairs said there are no winners in trade wars.
If United States and the U.S. start the trade war, then the one laughing on the side is China. We are very interlinked. We need America, and America needs us as well.
Now, Donald Trump says the tariffs would lift if Canada and Mexico did more to crack down on illegal immigration and fentanyl smuggling. And another twist in all this, Ontario, the leader of Ontario in Canada, is ripping up a contract with Elon Musk's Starlink internet services due to all this. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
All right, thank you, Owen. Well, despite the pause on tariffs with Mexico, reaction dominates the talk on Capitol Hill. Congressional Republicans are walking a thin line, raising concerns about the risks without directly criticizing the president's decision. While Democrats are yelling at the top of their lungs that prices are going to go up. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us now in the studio. Eric.
Well, Tracy, it's great to be with you. Several Republicans are concerned major commodities like the auto and agricultural industry will be especially hit hard. South Dakota Senator and Majority Leader John Thune says the ag industry is critical in his state and tariffs could hurt farmers and ranchers, while other Republicans say it's necessary to get China and Mexico to stop the flow of illegal drugs across the border, at least for now.
You need the Chinese government and the Mexican government to step in and do the business on their side of the border to help to protect our people. And if they're not going to do it out of the kindness of their hearts, then yes, we are going to have to use every tool in the toolbox economically in order to do so.
We have 100,000 people a year, Kristen, dying from fentanyl. He ran on this. This is not a surprise. He talked about getting operational control of our border. He talked about tariffs and improving our standing in the world. He's doing all those things.
Congressman Jason Smith, Ways and Means Committee Chair, agrees and wrote, quote, "The tariffs on imports from Canada, Mexico, and China send a powerful message that the United States will no longer stand by as other nations fail to halt the flow of illegal drugs and immigrants into our country. On the other side of the aisle, a much different message."
I'm hopeful we can get bipartisan legislation to prevent the president from raising these tariffs, or once he does, to roll them back. Everything you were promised during the election is out the window if these tariffs go through.
Others agree and say Americans are likely to face hardships.
It's going to hurt American families. They're going to see prices go up for food, for energy, for electronics. I think you mentioned that for autos. This is not the way to handle this.
Last week, the president signed an emergency order regarding energy. There's an energy emergency, and he just put a 10% tariff on energy from Canada. He is increasing prices.
By the way, Senator Tim Kaine and other Democrats have just introduced a bill which would require congressional approval before a president could impose new tariffs on U.S. allies and free trade agreements. Democrats say that the bill would reclaim congressional authority over trade policy and limit the president's ability to treat allies as enemies. Tracy, back to you.
All right. Thank you, Eric. President Donald Trump now says that he will freeze tariffs on Canada. He says Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has also agreed to help boost security on the U.S.-Canada border in order to decrease the amount of fentanyl coming into the country. The tariffs on both Canada and Mexico are now paused for 30 days. And joining us now is Jeffrey Campbell, professor of economics at the University of Notre Dame. Great to be with you. So President Trump has said and now has shown that he is not afraid to impose tariffs even on our allies. Professor Campbell, talk to us about this strategy and your thoughts.
So this strategy is, of course, there is some economic aspect to it or some economic goals, but the administration's obviously saying that its goals also are somewhat non-economic with regards to Canada and Mexico, of stopping trafficking in drugs and stopping trafficking in people. And it seems that this strategy has thus far been successful. We saw earlier this morning, President Sheinbaum, sending 10,000 troops to the border and the delay in tariffs while we can negotiate a more permanent settlement. We've seen Prime Minister Trudeau do something similar with the Canadian border. So we're starting to see some movement on the non-economic aspects of this. And I think that was always part of the goal. Another part of President Trump's goal was obviously to keep world leaders on their back foot and to keep them wondering what he's doing. That seems like a very good basic negotiation strategy, and it seems to be paying off at this point.
A lot of, you know, everyday Americans, they hear this tariffs and they think, well, how is this going to impact me and my bottom line, especially when I go to the grocery store, say, or to buy a car? How will this impact Americans long term and short term?
So short term, not much. Retailers adjust their prices only gradually after cost changes. So I wouldn't really expect very many short term changes unless you really enjoy maple syrup candy or Jarritos sodas. In the longer term, we might see some changes in the locations of where things are produced. So you talk about cars. You know, I just bought a car and its engine was made in Mexico and its transmission was made in Germany. And I can easily imagine that both of those decisions will change. And that will have an impact on prices. And that's, in fact, part of the goal is to move income from rich people such as ourselves who can afford to buy cars to less well-off people who are building the cars.
Before you let you go, almost out of time, President Trump also did threaten tariffs on the European Union and the UK. Let's talk a little bit more about that. Do you think that will actually happen, and how will that impact us?
I'm guessing that the tariffs on the UK won't happen. Prime Minister Starmer is smart enough to know how to avoid that, in the way that Prime Minister Trudeau and President Sheinbaum did. The European Union is a different matter. It's currently leaderless. The Germans are going to have elections soon, so they have effectively a caretaker government. They're going to have a hard time responding coherently to President Trump. So I do expect some tariffs to be imposed on there in the medium term. the typical U.S. consumer doesn't directly buy things that Europe makes, unless you're really into French wine. We're not going out and buying many things from them. We import a lot of very high-ticket investment goods. Think Rolls-Royce jet engines. But the impact of that on your ticket prices will be far, far down the road.
Well, Professor Campbell, thank you so much for your insights. Always great to be with you. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, now to Panama, where U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio is on his first foreign trip as America's top diplomat. Rubio called on Panama's president to immediately reduce China's influence over the canal or to prepare for future retaliation from the U.S. Rubio told the president that the communist country's presence in the canal may violate the treaty that led the U.S. to turn the canal over to Panama back in 1999. In turn, Panama's leader said that it would not be renewing its agreement with China's Belt and Road Initiative. The families of the victims in the plane crash at Reagan National Airport paid a visit to the site of the tragedy. As you can see in this video right here, relatives arrived in buses escorted by the police. Dozens of people were seen walking by the banks of the Potomac River, memorializing loved ones. Meanwhile, heavy machinery crews are pulling plane debris out of the water as they search for the remaining bodies. So far, 55 of the 67 victims have been found. Meanwhile, investigators in Philadelphia say they have recovered the black box from the deadly plane crash on Friday. A medical Learjet crashed, killing all six people on board and a seventh person on the ground in their car. The black box was found 8 feet below the site of the initial impact. It is still unclear why the plane crashed. More than a dozen people are dead after a car bomb exploded on the outskirts of northern Syria. The car exploded next to a vehicle carrying mostly female agricultural workers. So far, no one has claimed responsibility for that explosion. This was a seventh car explosion in the city of Manbij in just over a month. The region is still seeing much violence after the fall of President Bashar al-Assad in December. Now we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including a major shakeup in Washington, why President Trump is targeting USAID and what he plans to do with the agency, and a scary weekend on Paradise Island, why hundreds are fleeing the popular destination. The U.S. Agency for International Development has come into the crosshairs of President Trump, and he told his head of the Department of Government Efficiency, Elon Musk, to dismantle it. The past couple of days has been tumultuous for the agency. On Saturday, members of Musk's team arrived at the office and were physically blocked from accessing its internal systems. Then the agency's website vanished without warning. This morning, staffers were told to stay out of the agency's headquarters in Washington, D.C. The president said the agency needs new leadership.
It's been run by a bunch of radical lunatics, and we're getting them out. USAID, run by radical lunatics, and we're getting them out.
Well, now the agency has been absorbed by the State Department, with Secretary of State Marco Rubio saying today that he is the acting administrator of USAID. All right, for more, let's bring in Rick De La Torre, Senior Vice President at Continental Strategy and a retired CIA Senior Operations Officer. Rick, thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate it. Before we get into this current scuffle at USAID, tell us more about the agency itself and who funds it.
Right. So USAID, originally started under the Kennedy administration, is funded by the United States Congress, but it's not part of the United States Department of State. That just changed now, obviously. What's happened over the years, the original mission of USAID focused on advancing U.S. policy at the direction of the executive has evolved over the years into something that pretty much sometimes runs against U.S. foreign policy objectives. So with that in mind, I think this administration, they're looking at correcting that and making USAID more mainstreamed under the State Department.
Yeah, and let's talk about the controversy now. Apparently, Elon Musk, who is heading up DOGE, which, as we know, is tasked with reducing wasteful and unnecessary government spending, is pointing to some questionable expenditures, such as sending funds to EcoHealth Alliance, a medical research group that has been linked to the Wuhan lab in China, and also funding DEI and LGBTQ programs. What more do we know about this, Rick? And if it is true, does that fall in line with the concept of the agency?
Well, in my personal opinion, I don't think it does fall in line with the original intention and goals of the agency. It has had, over the years, consistently funded very, very controversial issues that many Americans may object to. Funding for abortions, funding, like you mentioned, to LGBTQ issues, and many foreign nations where this just isn't part of what they're looking for. USAID was originally intended to build bridges and to help water treatment facilities. And then now so much of that money really goes to controversial social causes that most Americans, many Americans, I'd argue, have their own personal problems with. And because of that, perhaps maybe we ought to consider whether or not those things should be taxpayer funded.
Yeah, and a lot of people are asking, you know, can President Trump, or any president for that matter, actually dismantle USAID? What say you?
I'll say one thing, that if there's anybody who can do it, it is certainly President Trump. He has, over the years, taught us that the impossible can be made possible. I think the top-down review of USAID, and by the way, let me also say that USAID does do some wonderful things out there, right? Let's be clear about that. But that, you know, we are now $35 trillion in debt. We currently need to start focusing our attention on being fiscally more responsible. And I think when taxpayers start learning more and more about some of these initiatives that are funded that they know nothing about, it becomes a real political liability and people lose faith in the institution overall. I suspect that President Trump, and particularly now under Marco Rubio, they will start working on making USAID reflect actually the policies of this administration and generally reflect foreign policy from the State Department and streamline their efforts and funding so that it makes more sense.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, they do some good things here. President Trump has ordered a freeze of foreign assistance there. So, Rick, you know, what kind of impact could this have around the world when it comes to those good things that this agency does?
Well, I think short term, that's going to be the most impactful, right? Because he's ordered a 90-day freeze, and I think we're, what, into day 4 or 5 of that. There are folks currently now at the State Department reviewing what initiatives are currently underway, what is USAID funding. And as soon as they review those and make sure that it is in line with the stated foreign policy objectives of this administration, things like, you know, what is America, you know, how does America benefit from this? How do the people that are requesting this aid, how do they benefit from this? You know, once those questions become clear, then I suspect they'll be approving programs one after the other and turning those back on.
Well, Rick, thank you so much for your insights. We really appreciate coming on.
No, thank you.
Today marks 2 years since the disastrous train derailment in East Palestine, Ohio. Vice President J.D. Vance traveled to the town today to mark the anniversary in the state that he once represented. The incident sent more than 1 million pounds of toxic chemicals into the water, soil, and air after a Norfolk Southern train slid off the tracks. This comes on the heels of a newly filed lawsuit alleging for the first time that people died in the wake of that crash. While an increase of seismic activity is sending shockwaves through Greece amid fears of a potential earthquake on the island of Santorini, the Greek prime minister is calling for calm.
We have a very intense geological phenomenon to handle. I want to ask our islanders first and foremost to remain calm, to listen to the instructions of the Civil Protection Authority. And I have already discussed with the responsible ministry to make a comprehensive presentation within the next few days.
Hundreds of people scrambled to leave the popular tourist destination ahead of a potentially more severe seismic activity. Authorities closed schools on 4 islands to shut down through Friday as a precautionary measure. More than 200 undersea earthquakes have been recorded in the past 3 days. Well, up next on EWTN News Nightly, our salvation and our light. Pope Francis tells the faithful how Jesus reveals the deeper truths of the human heart. Plus, a delegation of pilgrims travels to Rome to mark the Jubilee year. Hear what the Holy Father had to say to them. Pope Francis Jesus reminds us that Jesus is our salvation and our light.
Gesù è la salvezza, Gesù è la luce, e Gesù è il segno di contraddizione.
At a Sunday address at the Vatican, the Holy Father focused on three aspects of Christ revealed through Simeon's prophecy: salvation, light, and a sign of contradiction. He also explained how Jesus reveals the deeper truths of the human heart and the ultimate criterion by which all history is judged: love. Whoever loves lives, the Pope said, and whoever hates dies. Well, finally tonight, a delegation of pilgrims from the Nordic Bishops' Conference visited Rome, where Pope Francis invited them to be united witnesses of reconciliation and peace in times of war. EWTN Vatican journalist Benedict Sittergen has more.
The Catholic Church in the Nordic countries, Sweden, Norway, Denmark, Finland, and Iceland, is unique in many ways. While the northern European nations have deep Catholic roots, Catholicism is a small minority in each country today, with migrants making up most of the church's membership across Scandinavia. For the first time ever, these five small Catholic communities have organized a joint pilgrimage to Rome on the occasion of the 2025 Jubilee.
Because our bishops' conference is a Nordic conference, so we're quite remarkable in the church in being a multinational conference, comprising Norway, Denmark, Sweden, Finland, and Iceland. And we would like to manifest the oneness of our local church in an extended sense, and it's great that the faithful wanted to participate.
Over the span of 3 days, the 1,200 Nordic pilgrims visited Rome's holy sites and shared moments of prayer and reflection. While each country had its own national and diocesan events, the whole group also came together to celebrate Mass in the papal basilicas and walk as one body through the holy doors. The pilgrimage culminated in a private audience with Pope Francis and a solemn Mass at the altar of the chair in St. Peter's Basilica. Bishop Fredrik Hansen, coadjutor bishop of Oslo, stressed that this pilgrimage has been a powerful testament to the unity of the church.
I think there's a great sense in the Nordic churches that we need to stand together. We need to help one another. We are very much the same. We face similar challenges and we have a similar reality. But we are this minority, and for a minority to be able to be together and to be together within the context of the Universal Church matters a great deal. So to be here in Rome is always a great experience for us, strengthening us in our faith and uniting us with the Universal Church and the Holy Father.
Amid the many challenges posed by growing secularization, the Church in the Nordic countries is a witness to the hope that defines the Holy Year. Because of this, as the Nordic bishops emphasized in their homilies, Nordic Catholics are called to share the truth of Christ with all those searching for meaning and struggling with hopelessness.
Vi ber för varandra att vi genom vår pilgrimsfärd under detta jubileum.
Let us pray for one another, that through this pilgrimage during the Jubilee year, we may be strengthened in faith, hope, and love for Jesus Christ, so that we may bear credible witness to him and his church when we return home. So we pray, help us, Jesus Christ, you who are light from light, to spread your light in the darkness and cold of this world.
In Rome, Benedikt Cedegren, EWTN News Nightly.
And we thank you for watching. Now remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.